A dark room where the main sources of light are the LED lights crawling across from corner to corner of the entire venue, and countless TV and PC monitors placed alongside the walls and on the round tables at the center of the room. People are spread out in sporadic groups, watching and playing various video games. A projector screen is down, showing a Twitch stream is starting soon. At the bottom right corner of the screen is a blue Vortex logo with the words, Worlds Collide. This is Worlds Collide Esports Lounge on the corner of Nordhoff and Lindley in the plaza across from CSUN. Worlds Collide has been in business for over a year now and has over 40 people a day coming in to play games and compete in tournaments that they host themselves. Their prices are $5 an hour, $16 for 4 hours, $25 for an all-day pass, and customers have the option to pay $30 for a monthly membership with 10% off for CSUN students. They are open almost every day excluding Mondays from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. Staff ask the people in Worlds Collide some questions about this establishment, their personal connection to esports, and how esports works as a business and lifestyle. The CEO of Worlds Collide, Michael Espinoza, explains the difference in atmosphere of Worlds Collide and competing esports lounges.
There's a lot of other like PC cafes in this area, but they don't feel the same. Basically, every customer that comes in for me, I always like, I personally know them, or I've gotten to know them. So I have this one-on-one with my customer. Than like at the other places, it's very like, all right, it's $10, bye, hi, that's it. Like, that's all the interaction they ever get, you know? I make them feel at home, and I think that's like the reason why a lot of people do come back. They like the coziness.
Espinoza adds that advertising through social media is very helpful to get the word out about his business and for the tournaments they host, but he realized that it's important to have a aforementioned one-on-one relationship with his customer because word of mouth is the best way to get new customers to visit.
I think that would be the main thing to bring people back and to bring people in as well. Especially in this business, what I've noticed, it's very recommended type of base. So like, say if one customer comes in, most likely another customer that comes in is because the first customer that came in recommended the second one. Your first impressions are like the most important.
Espinoza talks about how he stays up to date with technology and that he has to pick and choose if something new is really the best.
I usually just check on like YouTube channels that like always introduce like other new like tech stuff comes out, especially for computers, like motherboards and all that. They're always coming out with like new stuff here and there. But usually majority of the time when a new motherboard and a new like graphics card comes out, it's not really the best, you know, so you kind of just have to like check out and wait. No.
Jesus Perez, also known as Joestar, is a former manager of Worlds Collide and is now one of their players for Dragon Ball FighterZ. Perez shares that video games have been a big part of his life since he was a child, so he wanted to be a part of the growing competitive culture, and now that he is a part of the community, keeping up with the competitive lifestyle of esports is like maintaining a job.
You know, you have to make time for it, you have to make time for training, you have to make time for going out to tournaments and competing. But once going into it, you start building a schedule around it. It's a 50-50. It becomes easier. It's like a job, you know? And the best way to play it is like a job, and you just start making time for it, and then everything starts rolling out smoothly.
Perez shares that going to Worlds Collide helps him train for minor tournaments, which allows him to travel out to other states and even countries. And although it's exhilarating, the pressure to perform well is nerve-wracking.
There's weekly tournaments and major tournaments. Weekly tournaments is just your it's like practice in a way to the major tournaments. You know, and that's when I get to travel out. And it's insane. It's definitely a lot of nerves because you're traveling out to all these different places, different states, different countries. It's awesome. It's cool. It's a new experience. But it's also pretty scary because you don't want to just go out there and lose. You know, you want to show off your region from wherever you're from and meet all these awesome new players.
Based on Perez's experience and observation, he shares that making a career out of esports depends on the person and if the environment allows them to make it a viable career path.
There's a lot of people that have made careers out of this, and it's insane, and they have their own business, their own teams and stuff like that. It's just a matter of how much hard work you put in and where you're at, really. In the States, it's still growing. It's still like a baby, you know? There's some people already having careers and whatnot, but it's not as big as it is in Japan or Korea, where they've been doing this since 1980s, and so filming it, showing it on TV.
Perez adds that when people noticed esports was making money, they could invest in it, making it a viable business.
I guess once they started seeing that more people are putting in money, putting in time to these things, it was attracting attention from a lot of different people. That's when they started seeing that, hey, there's money in the esports. People will jump on anything that pretty much has the attention. They know if they get the best players, if this is the best game right now and people are playing it nonstop, they're going to make money off of all of that merchandise, the game itself, all that good stuff.
William Hunter, also known as Rush SDR, or Rush, is a regular at Worlds Collide and frequently plays in their tournaments, along with tournaments that require him to travel. He shares that he started to get into the esports community because he wanted to play with other people.
It seemed like a logical progression from just sort of sitting at home playing fighting games with nobody. So I decided, hey, maybe I should find someone else who plays fighting games.
Hunter adds that although some people view this as a profession, it's more recreational for him.
I know a lot of people take it really, really seriously, but I see it as more of a hobby. It's a way for me to sort of chill out, spend my time, hang out with friends, travel out, see new places.
Hunter mentions that an esports lounge is just a more advanced version of an already existing business, but has not been fully acknowledged.
It's just kind of the logical progression of a regular computer cafe. But I don't know if American society has entirely accepted esports.
Hunter comments on the viability of esports as a career, and although it's viable, keeping it is difficult.
Someone else will always come along who's going to make it their sole career decision to beat you if you're at the top. At some point, you're not going to be the best anymore, and what do you do from there?
Hunter reveals that the secret to sustaining your place is to keep practicing and playing.
I can fly!
Sirkon Garrett, another regular at Worlds Collide and more casual tournament participant, says that esports seems to be legitimate, but mostly just to the esports and gaming community.
We've had this esports debate before. There's a pretty popular clip, I think, of Good Morning America, where it's just people sitting on computers, and they're not wrong. It is people sitting at chairs in front of screens with controllers in their hands or keyboards or whatever. So as a spectator sport, to most, it doesn't look like much. It's definitely for people that know what's going on in the game itself.
Garrett adds that what really made esports legitimate was brands and companies seizing the opportunity to make money in this area.
When sponsorship started carrying, once the player base sort of accrued, naturally, companies look to that and they're like, this guy, Hungrybox, this guy, Daigo, or these that are Cloud9 and maybe other teams. They go, these are people with a fan base following them. We can put our logo on them and we can attract some business this way. Once the business starts to come in, then you have what I guess kind of legitimizes the sport. It's why they got spots on television now.
Garrett shares that he got involved with gaming because it has been in his life since he was very young.
The first game I ever played was point and click adventure games, Putt-Putt or Pajama Sam on the PC. But I guess the game that I really sat down for the first time and played was on the Nintendo 64, and it was Pokemon Stadium. Everyone around me also played games, so we all just sort of kept playing games together, just like me and all my friend groups as I moved on in years.
On the topic of esports lounges, Garrett states that the most appealing part is the community with shared interests.
It's a culture there, but most of all, it's like-minded individuals. I can go there and I know I'll find people who are interested in the same things that I'm interested in this subject that is competitive gaming. It's going to a sports bar, I guess.
He continues saying that he has met people there that he would never have met if it weren't for Worlds Collide.
I know everyone else is there more or less with the same purpose. I've gotten to know some people. I know a guy who does streams every week, and he only plays old retro fighters, and he gets a bunch of people together to do that. So I've played with him a few times, and I've met some people who have actually been a part of, the actual big esports league itself. People that have done well in tournaments, and people who, like me, don't do well in tournaments.
Garrett further explains when he joined and that he was pulled into the esports scene because of the people and the culture.
I definitely came in after Street Fighter 4 was at its peak, and I think the term for that is 09ers. And for me, definitely, I think I was more kind of just attracted to the community.
Garrett confesses that without gaming, although he believes he'd be doing better things, he genuinely believes he would be a more dull and unhappy person.
A part of me wants to say probably more successful. But a part of me also thinks that I'd be much, much less happy in a sense. No, I'm not saying I'm like sunshines and rainbows every day of my life, but I feel like if I didn't have gaming as a hobby, I'd be a much more hollow person.
To play Smash at Ernesto's and Adams, I guess.
Tournament host and organizer, Matthew Park, also known as Count Chief, explains that there are two brackets, a normal sports bracket and a double elimination bracket.
Usually with fighting games, we have a thing called a double elimination bracket, where you lose the first time, you get sent to a loser's bracket. You have another chance to play through again until you actually lose. Or you could just continue until you make it to the grand finals.
Park further explains that seeding for a bracket makes sure everyone has a fair chance.
It's just a way to really determine like who's the best so that there won't be any issues of low-skilled players running into a really good player like early rounds and not allowing that happening, or if it happens, it happens in like a later round. And seeding is pretty important because sometimes when players actually enter the tournament, they can also run into each other, whether it's their friends or someone they play a lot. And that's also a big factor to bracket too, to make sure players who are really connected with each other don't meet as early as like round one or two, maybe like quarters, semis, or finals.
Park shares that they stream at Worlds Collide every Wednesday so people can become more connected.
So we can have people watching our tournaments so that players can get recognition, our tournaments can get recognition, so that people will know who we are and will know who they are. And it's just a way to connect and show like this is what a tournament's like and this is how good the players are. And also encourages more people to come and enter the scene and do good themselves as well.
Park gives some insight on how small tournaments are for people who are nearby, while big tournaments bring people from all over the globe.
And also with small tournaments, it's mostly supposed to attract people around the small tournaments, like within 10, 30 miles from here. While bigger tournaments are supposed to like really get the whole world together, whether it's from Asia, Europe, or other continents out there.
Park reveals, to make esports and gaming a viable career path, a person needs to do more than compete in tournaments.
Competing isn't the only thing they should be doing. They should also be like posting videos on YouTube or streaming on Twitch to get subscribers and more viewership, more followers, and I guess money too. In the long run, tournaments will help you, but what will also benefit is if you do other things as well with your gaming career.
Park shares that the fighting game community, or FGC, isn't really new, but the people who keep it alive are the community itself and sometimes the game developers.
The FGC has been around for quite a long time. It has been looked pretty well as an esport, but right now, it really depends on how much the developers wants to contribute to the tournament scene or how much the community wants to contribute. All tournaments is mostly community run, and then the developers usually just like to help support it by adding a pot bonus or advertise it, sponsor it, or just let people know, be like, hey, this is happening, you should watch it.
Yeah. Hi. You guys gonna have like Bunksy or something?
I can't remember the last time I was up for 24 hours straight.
When asked what the difference was between playing at an esports lounge and playing at home, Park, Garrett, Hunter, Perez, and Espinoza can all agree that home is playing for yourself and improving your game, while an esports lounge brings a challenge along with a welcoming community.
It's supposed to feel like it's your own dojo, your own individual space where you can just like practice anything you want to improve on. Esports lounge is more for like if you want to just come in and play, whether you want to compete or whether you want to play, just enjoy yourselves and just get to know more people who are also there as well. Because it's called an esports lounge because you come to compete. You come to win, I don't know. You come to play, obviously.
Atmosphere makes everything. You know, it's why I think, what is it, the Hard Rock Cafe gets to charge so much for their mediocre burgers. It's the same thing. You know, you play at an esports lounge, you play next to people, you compete next to them. It's much more different than just being at home, sitting at your computer or at your couch and just looking at a screen by yourself.
At a tournament, you just don't want to look like a fool because you came out to this major event, you spent your money, now you're here to prove what you can do. Playing at like a lounge or in a local tournament, that's more workshop time. Figure out how well your stuff that you've been practicing at home works against other people. And playing at home is either just playing online, which is kind of a way to practice against other people, or practicing your tech in the training mode or the lab. So I guess it's more of a priority thing for the differences between them.
If you play at home, you're going to be playing online a lot, you know, depending on who you are. You're going to be in the training mode, you're going to be online. The thing is, it's a lot different playing online and playing locally because, you know, online you have the internet connection, sometimes it'll lag, sometimes there's frames that drop, all this other stuff. And when you're playing locally, there's none of that. So whatever you input in, whatever you do, all that good stuff. It's there. And it's a lot bigger experience because you can't just play online and go to a tournament and expect to do well because the nerves are going to get you. But playing at these local tournaments and whatnot helps you cope with that. It helps you learn, like, hey, I shouldn't be nervous. It's just a tournament. Whatever, we're going to get through it. It's just, it's a big, big difference. It's a whole different experience.
It's a lot more interactive than, like, playing at home. And playing at home, you're usually just playing either by yourself or somebody that you already know. There's just been a couple times where people have just, like, there's, like, two people maybe playing. One's playing League on one side of the room. Another guy's playing League on the other side of the room. And they're like, oh, you play League too? And they queue up and play, and then basically a relationship is built just on that random day that they both came, and now they're playing playing games with each other.
Esports is on its way to becoming a $1.2 billion market. This has been Michael Benavides from KPCRadio.com. Yeah.